And you are on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. And for another fortnight, welcome to Law Matters, the fortnightly program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia in Perth, broadcast on Noongar Radio here in Perth and also through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. I don't know what that was, but we'll stop it right there. And I hope you can stay tuned with me for this hour. Coming up a little bit later, going to be chatting with Tammy Solonek, who is the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Manager for Amnesty International Australia. Going to be finding out what that role involves, as well as the Sir Ronald Wilson lecture, which Tammy did present for 2014, all about justice reinvestment. Speaking of law, we are also going to find out about the role of the Law Society of Western Australia. Why was it set up? Who is it there to help? What are some of the community projects they're involved in? That's coming up really soon. Well, we are a legal program and we like to chat with different people who are involved in the justice system here in Western Australia. And we thought it would be good to touch base with the Law Society of Western Australia, which has been going far longer than I realised. And did you realise that a meeting held in the Supreme Court Library in 1927, there was a fellow by the name of T.A.L. Davey who moved that an Association of Legal Practitioners of Western Australia be formed. The motion was seconded, others joined in, and the rest is history. And to give us an insight into all of those years and some of the highlights and goals of the Law Society, welcome to Law Matters, Matthew Keogh, who is the Senior Vice President of the Law Society of WA. Matthew, thanks for your time on Law Matters. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. It's great to be able to speak with you and your listeners.
I was checking out the website, Matthew, and I didn't realise that the Law Society dated back to 1927. That's enormous.
It's been a long time, and the society's seen a lot of change within itself and within society and the whole legal system over that time, from very early and humble beginnings of the early history of the state.
I wonder how big it was when it was started back then.
Look, the legal profession was very small back then. I don't know the exact number, but it would have been little more than 100, if that, I have to say.
Now, we see the Law Society's name pop up everywhere, from events through Law Week to community discussions to the Sir Ronald Wilson lecture, which we'll be chatting about with Tammy Solonek later this hour, who presented this year's lecture. But give us an overview of what it actually is and if it's there for lawyers or community or both.
Look, the Law Society is there for lawyers and for the community. Primarily, it is a professional association that represents its members, and its members are predominantly lawyers, both in private practice, government, also in the community sector and in-house. It also represents law students to some extent and graduates, legal academics, the judiciary, but it has a broader community focus as well. The society advocates for its members, but it's also very involved in law reform and the lobbying of government at a federal and state level, and working with the courts to make sure we provide a better justice system for everybody in this state. It also provides education services for lawyers and public education. So we run a museum about the legal system in WA and also education programs for high school students.
Matthew, I'm just thinking geographically and the size of Western Australia. Do you think it's different to law societies in other states and territories?
Yes, look, we do face what is really a challenge in the state of Western Australia, both as a society trying to service our members and generally trying to provide a comprehensive legal system across the state. We are primarily centrally based, though we do try to take our programs, particularly education programs for lawyers, out into the various regions, and that is a challenge, and it's a challenge that is very unique to Western Australia, both because of our geographical size, but also our very concentrated nature of the justice system and the legal profession. I'm sure many of your listeners would be aware there are not many lawyers outside of Perth, and particularly there are very few lawyers north of Geraldton, which makes it very hard for people to get access to justice and get access to legal advice.
I guess we're well aware of that at the Aboriginal Legal Service. I mean, we've got 15 offices across the state, including our head office in Perth, but there's a lot of areas to service, isn't there? A lot of remote and regional parts of the state that are treated through circuits and magistrates flying into remote regions to make sure that people are represented.
It's a very complex issue, and we've recently established a country lawyers committee to try and work with advising the society on how we can better help the lawyers that are out in the regions and out in very remote areas of Western Australia, as well as a committee working with government lawyers who are often placed out in remote areas as well. It is a constant challenge for the society, and it's one that we're really trying to work more and more on in terms of having better connection with lawyers out in the regions, but also working with government and with other providers around making sure that legal services generally are being adequately provided out in the regions.
I'm chatting with Matthew Keogh, who is the Senior Vice President of the Law Society of Western Australia. Matthew, do you know how many members the Society's got?
I don't have the exact number off the top of my head at the moment, but it's around the 3,500 mark is the size of our membership. So we're around 50% of all of the lawyers in WA are a member of the Law Society.
What are some of the big events that the Law Society is involved in from year to year? I know that obviously the Sir Ronald Wilson Lecture is one. Our own CEO, Dennis Eggington, was honoured to present the lecture a couple of years ago. And Tammy is a former staffer of the Aboriginal Legal Service as well, former manager of our Law and Advocacy Unit. It is a great event on the calendar, not just for people already in the profession, but for a lot of up-and-coming law students to get a greater insight into issues. But what are some of the other things you're involved with during the year?
Look, there's a series of events throughout the year. Most of them, admittedly, are targeted towards the profession, but some have a broader community outlook, such as the Sir Ronald Wilson Lecture. There's also many events taking place through Law Week, which is in May each year, which are things like court tours, education programs, free legal advice services, educating people about the legal system, as well as training for lawyers, looking at key issues for the profession like mental health, depression and well-being. We have a ball for our young lawyers once a year. We also run a program called our Social Justice Opportunities Evening, which is an evening where people from the community legal sector and other not-for-profits and non-government organisations come and speak and inform lawyers about the work that they do as an opportunity for lawyers and law students to either volunteer, or they might be looking for a career change from government or in-house to go and work in the not-for-profit space. And we like to encourage those various options of working in the law and various different ways of helping people to the wider profession.
We've spoken before with the Aboriginal Lawyers Committee that was set up through the Law Society of Western Australia. How important do you think it is that there is a committee just for Aboriginal lawyers?
Look, I think it's very important, and I think it's been a great development that the Society has been able to be to establish that committee, and I think that committee's already doing some interesting and valuable work. I was very fortunate to be part of a meeting that committee held with Ken White, who is a Federal Member of Parliament who's been chairing the Joint Parliamentary Committee on the Constitutional Recognition of Aboriginal People in the Australian Constitution. That was a great opportunity to bring together some of the leaders of the Aboriginal legal profession, if you like, to talk to him about the work that's been going on in that area, to express their views, and I think the Society being able to facilitate that, I was personally very proud to be involved in that. And those sorts of issues and being able to highlight issues that sometimes people in the profession that are working in other areas are not aware of is been a very valuable outcome of the creation of that committee.
Matthew Keogh is our guest on Law Matters today, Senior Vice President of the Law Society of Western Australia. Matthew, I'm keen to know the issues facing a lot of people, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in Western Australia. Do they differ from the rest of the country?
Western Australia has one particularly, I won't say unique, but suffers worse than any other state in the country, which is Indigenous incarceration, which is a major issue in Western Australia, and it's one that the Law Society has been lobbying the state government hard in relation to, and it's one that I think many in the profession, regardless of their area of work, are well aware of because it's much discussed in our journals and in our communications with lawyers. But many of the issues being suffered are similar across the country as in Western Australia. I think one of the critical issues for Western Australia, which makes life more difficult, is the vast size of the state and its relatively low population. And so being able to provide proper legal services to people across this far-flung state, as only those in ALS would be more than well aware, is very difficult, and it's very expensive to do because of the vast distances that need to be travelled. So that's probably a uniquely Western Australian problem, or it's exacerbated in Western Australia. And those issues exacerbate other issues, more of social issues, as well as how they're responded to in the legal system.
Tammy Solonek's topic for the 2014 Sir Ronald Wilson lecture was justice reinvestment. What are your own views, or the views of the society, about justice reinvestment?
Personally, I'm a very strong supporter of justice reinvestment, and the concepts of justice reinvestment are things that we have spoken to both state and federal government about, and supporting those approaches being to really invest in things and programs that divert people away or from the criminal justice system, or are going to reduce crime and reduce the instances of crime in the first place, working in an intensive way with people that are suffering from other social ills or problems and concerns, so that they are less likely to be driven towards or find themselves in a situation of committing crimes. That is a very logical approach from our point of view, and it would be definitely part of the approach that needs to be taken in reducing the high instance of Aboriginal incarceration.
It is incredible in Western Australia that more prisons continue to be built in this state. More Aboriginal people are being incarcerated. It is clear that the current system isn't working, and I think the justice reinvestment model is one that is gaining more and more support all the time, isn't it? More and more people from different backgrounds are coming out and saying, hey, this has been proven to work in other parts of the world. It needs to be embraced here in Australia.
Look, it is gaining momentum and traction across the country, and it's one of those concepts that when you sit down with people and work through it, almost immediately people can see the benefit and how that will work. One of the ever-present difficulties, though, is the election cycles and the concern, I think, of governments that if they take these approaches that they may be seen as being somehow soft on crime. That's unfortunate, and the Law Society, in its discussions with government around these sorts of areas, has been very clear. We don't want to be critical of government. What we want to do is to be encouraging all political parties to see the benefits of this sort of approach and to move towards them, hopefully, in a bipartisan way.
Matthew, what's some of the other events on the calendar for the remainder of the year for the Law Society of WA?
For the remainder of the year, of relevance to young lawyers, a big event is the ball that's coming up later in the year. We also have a number of events that are of a training nature. So we run a very extensive program of what we call our compulsory professional development program, making sure that our lawyers are well trained throughout the state so they can provide the best service to people. We've also got, we're working on a major project around enhancing our law access program, which is a service that works to try and link people in need of pro bono legal assistance to lawyers that can provide that assistance. And we've had a program existing for a long time. We're now working more closely with a number of partners in the not-for-profit community legal sector, as well as people in the private profession who are happy to give up their time, and many lawyers are in Western Australia happy to give their time on a pro bono basis, and we're now working through that process to make sure we can provide an even better service, because there is a crying need in Western Australia for services like that.
I know that with our own organisation, the Aboriginal Legal Service, some of the pro bono assistance that's been provided to us by other firms is incredible, and with our funding and our commitments and our workloads, there's no way that some of those bigger cases could have got off the ground without that assistance. It's absolutely vital, and we find that people that do come and help out at the ALS, they love it, because it is such a different experience and environment to work in.
Look, indeed, and I think it's one of the unsung songs of the legal profession as a whole, is that every day, in many different ways, whether it's large firms working in partnership with groups like ALS or very small practitioners doing one or two cases where they can fit it in, there is many free or cheap legal services being provided around the state to those in need, and people are not crying from the rooftops about it, but it's going on every day, and it's a very impressive part of, and an integral part of, being a lawyer and the services that are provided by lawyers.
Matthew, thank you for chatting with us today on the program. Matthew Keogh is from the Law Society of Western Australia, which is the peak professional association for lawyers here in this state. Established back in 1927, it's a not-for-profit association dedicated to the representation of its 3,400 members. If people aren't a member of the Law Society, or you've got students studying through their law degrees and heads down doing all their work and are going to be becoming lawyers, what would you say the advantages to them are of becoming involved with the Society?
The advantages of being involved in the Law Society are numerous. From a personal level, it's a way of getting involved and meeting other lawyers, expanding your options in the profession by meeting people throughout the profession. But it's also a critical way of you've got the opportunity of giving back and being involved in law reform, working with our various committees on different areas of law, or committees like the Aboriginal Committee on different areas of law reform and policy. So you gain personally yourself by joining, but you can also be giving to the wider community and to the profession, and it's about building the collegiality of the profession. It's a small profession in WA, and it's one that can achieve great things together, and that's part of what the Law Society is about.
So we urge people to jump on the website, check out the Law Society's information, www.lawsocietywa.asn.au. What's a contact number people can phone, Matthew?
That's a very, very good, good question, but it is...
Actually, I think...
9-344-8600.
And that's in Perth. So 089-9324-8600. Matthew Keogh, thanks for your time on Law Matters. We look forward to another chat in the future.
Look, it's been great, and it's been great to speak with you.
Matthew is the Senior Vice President of the Law Society of Western Australia. And, do check them out. So much stuff on the website, or give them a call and find out what they can do for you. You're with Jodie Hoffman on Law Matters. Coming up shortly, the presenter of the Law Society of WA's 2014 Sir Ronald Wilson Lecture, Tammy Solonek, that's up next here on Law Matters. I hope you're enjoying the program. This is Law Matters, brought to you each fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman with you until the top of the hour, so I hope you can stay tuned. A little earlier in the program, we were talking to Matthew Keogh from the Law Society of Western Australia, so I hope that's given you a little bit of a better insight into what they do and why they were set up back in 1927. And we did mention that as part of their annual events is the Sir Ronald Wilson Lecture, and Tammy Solonek presented that lecture last month, and the topic was on justice reinvestment. So I'd like to welcome Tammy to the program. We're going to talk about not only that lecture, but her role as Amnesty International Australia's Indigenous Peoples Rights Manager. Tammy Solonek, welcome to the program, speaking to us from Fitzroy Crossing in the north of the state. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jodie. Thanks so much for having me on.
Let's look around Fitzroy Crossing. Tell us what you can see. Set up a geographical map for us, Tammy, because we're now also broadcast through the National Indigenous Radio Service. So describe Fitzroy Crossing for us.
Well, Fitzroy Crossing is on the Fitzroy River. I'm actually staying at the Fitzroy Inn, looking outside my window at the moment at the Fitzroy River in front of me. I always stay at the inn because the river's right here. It's beautiful. I'm a Nigana woman, and my people are the Fitzroy River people. So even though I'm not from Fitzroy, I'm from Derby, this is a very special place for me to be here. And just to look out over this river is spectacular.
Okay, so you're up there on Amnesty International work. You're lucky thing, getting to travel around in the job. How long have you been in Fitzroy?
We only arrived last night. We were in Broome for the last 2 days, and we'll be here till Friday, and then we head up to Wyndham, and we're actually going out to the community of Wumbulgari.
All right. Well, look, let's start at the beginning, Tammy, and talk about your involvement in law, when you got involved, and what made you decide to embark on a career in law?
Well, I was was actually part of the inaugural Aboriginal pre-law program back in 1994 at UWA. So that was the first Aboriginal pre-law program for all of Australia. And I was the youngest participant. I was 17, straight out from high school. So that was, an amazing thing to be part of that. I'd actually done my TE at high school. I was going to be a phys ed teacher. And, of course, I got quite a high score, but not high enough to get into law. And then this program came up, and I was like, and they said, do you want to give it a go? And I did, and I was actually really good at it. I loved it. And I haven't really looked back from there. It's been law all the way.
Must have been exciting to be part of the inaugural program, and I guess everyone from that program's branched off into different areas.
Yeah, had people like Kate O'Muir and Andy Matthews, and amazing people to work with, and Clinton Wolfe was another one in our program. So it's been a wonderful platform for many people.
You spent some years at the Aboriginal Legal Service, Tammy, with the Law and Advocacy Unit, which was a really exciting area of the ALS's work, doing policy and reform and getting information out to the community. It's an ever-changing role in terms of prioritising what needs to happen in law and justice for our mob in Western Australia, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, one of the most amazing wonderful opportunities for me as a lawyer to work on, but tragic case was the Ward inquest. Getting a taste of coronial inquests, which then led on to policy and law reform work, was sort of my step into the law and advocacy, to managing the law and advocacy unit. I just found that I like big picture stuff, and so it was really great to have that opportunity at ALS to learn about policy and law reform. And now, at Amnesty, I'm moving into the stage where I'm using that knowledge about what needs to reform in laws into a campaign cycle. So, so we can not just write the submission, which sits on a shelf and no one really looks at, but really have targeted campaigns to make the recommendations become a reality. So it's all been a wonderful gradual progression, and working at the ALS in that policy and law reform area was a wonderful opportunity.
I'm chatting with Tammy Solonek, who is the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Manager with Amnesty International Australia. Tammy, the announcement was made that you were in that role back in April of this year. You must have been thrilled.
Yes, I've wanted this job for so long. I've applied, Rodney Dillon's the Indigenous Advisor, I applied for his job and got shortlisted but didn't get it. And then when it came up before Monica Morgan, I was also shortlisted and didn't get it. And I persevered, and then the next time it came round, I think I'd reached the level of maturity and I'd done all that work at ALS and it just flowed. And so, I've really wanted to work here for a long time and I'm so happy to have the job.
Why was that? What was it about Amnesty that attracted you?
I like prisoners' rights. I think that just because someone's done something wrong in their life and they're in prison doesn't mean they're not worthy. I think that a lot of people are put in prison, particularly in Australia and Aboriginal people, because of their socio-economic circumstances that they're born into. It's just really sad, and a lot of people give up on them, and we've got this real punishment focus in Australia, extending from being a penal colony, and I've never agreed with that. So having an organisation whose, basis and foundation is about advocating for the rights of people who are locked up was something that was really important to me.
Okay, you would have no doubt seen the new prison in Derby?
No, I haven't been out there yet.
Oh, okay.
I've driven past it.
Yes.
But I haven't been out there, yeah. I mean, we're focusing on juveniles at the moment, so it's an adult prison, so we haven't really had the need to go out to there yet, but I would like to see it.
And I imagine that, our mob are very diverse from location to location, and I guess are the issues unique to certain areas in terms of what needs to be prioritised to look after our mob?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is one of the concepts of behind justice reinvestment, that a localised approach is needed. So, in some of the remote communities, when I was working on the Ward inquest, for example, out in the Nunatjarra lands in Warburton, hardly anyone had their driver's licence because there wasn't a person to get the hours up. So, licensing was a huge issue out there, and that's not such an issue in Perth. And so, localised solutions to local problems is incredibly important.
All right, tell us what else is involved in your role as the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Manager with Amnesty International Australia.
Yeah, so I manage a small team. Got Rodney Dillon, who's our advisor, He's based in Tasmania. Then there's Brian Andy, who is our human rights educator based in Victoria. And we've also got Julian Cleary. We poached him from the Land Council in Alice Springs. He's a lawyer as well, and he's our principal researcher writer. So I manage them in terms of, you know, staffing. But then we work with a whole lot of other people within Amnesty, the media teams. Like, we brought up Natalie Hill, who is a researcher from the International Secretariat with us on this trip. We're working very closely with her on a big report that we're doing. In fact, that's the focus of our work right now, is we're doing a big report which will lead on to a campaign to reduce the incarceration of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander youth, focusing on Western Australia, Queensland and the Northern Territory. And that's the main focus, but then all sorts of other things. So, like, we're doing a submission on constitutional recognition at the moment. We've just put out a press release yesterday about the tear gassing of the children in the juvenile detention centre in Darwin. So we need to respond to things straight away. We've just done cultural competency with the whole organisation. There's lots. It's a big role.
I'm chatting with Tammy Solonek, who's speaking to us from Fitzroy Crossing in the north of Western Australia. Tammy, you're a proud Nikina woman, a proud mum. What's your driving forces for what you're doing? Because it is very challenging work, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think growing up in regional and remote WA, so I was born in Derby, and I lived in Derby, Exmouth, Mullawar, Marble Bar, Tom Price and Perth, and I've just seen the injustice of it all my life, you know? It's just so wrong the difference between, income and the way people are treated. So I think that's a big part of it. But also my mother. You know, when I was a teenager in Tom Price, Mum did one of those block release courses and started studying Aboriginal intercultural studies, and she taught us all about all this stuff. She'd sit and read to us, and, you know, although Mum won't admit it, she's an activist as well. So, and I've actually got an activist family. We've got, like, a lot of my aunties. Wayne Bergman, my cousin, was the CEO of the Kimberley Land Council. Sam Cook was the head of Yuriyarkin, and she's my cousin too. So it's in our family. We do this stuff, and I was raised with it.
Do you find that the more you find out about the injustice that a lot of people are facing, the more there is to find out?
It's constant learning.
It is,
constant.
Isn't it?
Yes. And you never know anything, and the elders will tell you that.
It's a continuing journey, that's for sure. I'm talking with Tammy Solonek. Tammy, you were invited to present the Sir Ronald Wilson lecture that took place in Perth in August. Yes. The topic that you chose was justice reinvestment. What difference could it make in Western Australia? Before we talk about justice reinvestment, how did it feel to be invited to present that lecture? Because it's a big deal on the calendar.
And when I first got the invitation, it was this big formal invitation that I received this letter and all these attachments to it, and that it was a bit overwhelming, really. And then when I looked at who had presented it before, I was including Dennis. So Dennis presented it, 2 years ago?
Yeah, two or three, yep.
It was just a big deal, and it was actually pretty overwhelming. I was really stressed about it. I'm glad it's over.
It's a friendly crowd, though, isn't it?
It is a friendly
crowd. People are there because they want to be.
Yeah, but it was a whole hour and a half, you know, delivering. I mean, there was the introductions, and then we had a really good Q&A section at the end, but I was speaking for an hour, so that's a big lecture to deliver. And it took a lot of time to write it and to reference it, but there's been great results. You know, the speech has been published. I've done a few interviews as a result. I've done an opinion piece, which I hope will get published in the West soon. So, you know, the effort was definitely worth it, and it kind of honed my thinking on justice reinvestment and how it would apply on a state level.
And we should say that at the end of this interview, if you're inspired to find out more about justice reinvestment, Tammy's speech is on the website for the Law Society of Western Australia. Tammy, I want to start at the beginning with justice reinvestment, because it's a term that people are hearing more and more frequently as there's growing support for it. But for somebody who's hearing that term for the very first time today on this program, what is justice reinvestment?
Justice reinvestment is a framework, a justice system framework, there's like four steps to it. First of all, you do mapping, so you look at the prisoner population to find out where the majority of offenders come from, and then you identify high-risk communities. Then you do an analysis of what the offending was in those communities, you know, like that localised approach I was talking about. Then you reinvest diversionary programs targeted to whatever the offending is in those communities, and then you reevaluate. It's logic, you know, it makes sense, and it's been officially adopted in 26 US states. For example, Texas, the Wild West of America, have closed 3 prisons as a result. So we figure if it can work for the Wild West of America, it's got a chance for the Wild West of Australia.
No, one would hope so. And I think the thing is as well that a lot of people think it's an expensive option, but it actually saves money, doesn't it?
It does, it does. They've saved billions. In fact, it came about as a result of the American system. They just couldn't afford to keep locking up as many people as they could, and they had this big think tank in New York to come up with ways to save money. And the result was this amazing framework, which not only saved billions of dollars, but also diverted heaps of people from the justice system and improved their lives. You know, it's a social solution and it's an economic solution. Win-win.
It's incredible, isn't it? Diverting one person from that justice system can have flow-ons not just to that person but their family, their extended family, the community they live in. There are benefits all over the place, eh?
Yeah, and instead of them costing the taxpayer millions of dollars getting them locked up, they can be out getting a job, you know, and actually making money and contributing to the economy.
Yes.
But the costs are quite incredible.
Let's talk in more detail about justice reinvestment and some of the key points that you got across in your presentation recently.
Okay, well, I mean, talking about looking at international jurisprudence and what's happening in other jurisdictions and areas, so, you know, the fact that it has come from America and that America is a different system to Australia. I mean, we think our justice system is broken. Theirs was much more broken. So I did talk about some of the challenges about fitting this system that has worked in America to Australia. For example, in Texas, where they've had a lot of success, a lot of the high-risk communities were really densely populated ghetto-like suburbs. So it's obviously a lot cheaper to put diversionary programs into a highly populated area than it is a remote community. So in America, you know, their prison population is about, you know, 40% Hispanic, 40% African American, and then the Indigenous population is a lot smaller. Whereas here, you know, we have one race which is making up the majority of the people incarcerated. So there are differences. So I sort of pulled that apart a bit and looked at how it would work in Western Australia. I also talked a lot about politics and rhetoric. So in Australia, you know, coming from this penal colony, we have, for, you know, since we were colonised or settled or invaded, I should say, since that happened, we've had this punishment focus, you know, tough on crime. If someone does something bad, we'll lock them away for a long time. So people have this in their psyche. So a lot of what we've had to do is changing the rhetoric. So we're trying to teach people about, instead of being tough on crime, we want to be smart on crime. You know, instead of locking people up, we want to divert people. It's really about moving from spending all the money and justice on the tail end to locking people up, and judges, magistrates, once they've done something wrong, to strategically using data, trying to figure out when they will offend and who will offend and diverting them in the first place. So it's prevention rather than a band-aid.
It has certainly gained a lot of momentum in the last few years. It's a concept that the Aboriginal Legal Service is very supportive of and has advocated strongly for. Do you find that it is getting more momentum from the decision makers who can actually make it a reality?
Yeah, well, I think justice reinvestment, the term, scares people sometimes and the framework, but a lot of the concepts within the justice reinvestment framework are starting to be adopted. So we're starting to see a lot more prevention programs, a lot more diversionary programs. We're starting to see data collection seen as something that's really important and that we need to standardise our data collection. So all the sort of basis fundamentals to have justice reinvestment work, people are starting to do. But they're not like fully adopting the justice reinvestment. It's kind of haphazard and a bit here and a bit there rather than a full commitment from the government and the bureaucrats all coming together to agree that we need to do this system, which is what's happened in America. So it's the politics really that we need to work on now to get government on side. So, you know, I was working on justice reinvestment from my time at the Aboriginal Legal Service. That's when I first came across it. We did quite a bit of work on it. And we formed an interim committee for WA. But we were all made up of NGOs. It was like the Aboriginal Legal Service and OutCare and Aboriginal Alcohol and Drug Programs. And government didn't take us seriously. We didn't have government sitting around that table. So we really need to get that buy-in. So it's community groups, Indigenous groups, NGOs, lawyers, government, all working together. That's the bit that's going to make this work.
It's interesting too, isn't it, Tammy, that it is organisations like Amnesty or the Aboriginal Legal Service or Aboriginal service providers in remote and regional Western Australia, the communities themselves, the elders that know what the issues are, what programs are working, and we shouldn't shy away from the fact that there are some great community initiatives happening in regional Western Australia that are kicking huge goals.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, I've just finished an interview with the Uriman Project up here in Fitzroy, which is, you know, one of the main reasons we're up here, all for the FASD issues. But, you know, we had a huge conversation about funding. They've got amazing programs that work. They've got elders engaged, but they still can't get ongoing core funding for these programs. And, you know, we are capable of making our own solutions. We just need the government to come and work with us rather than thinking that they know best and that they'll do it for us. There's all this paternalism all the time, but we can solve our problems. We just need them to support us.
Okay, so justice reinvestment is certainly being talked about more and more. Your work with Amnesty International continues. What's next on the agenda for you, Tammy Solonek?
Yeah, well, we're just having a look at the community Bumbulgari at the moment, the forced eviction. So Amnesty, prior to the Indigenous Youth Justice Campaign, which we're working on now, we ran a campaign on homelands for the people of Utopia in Northern Territory, their right to live on the homelands. So I'm up here at the moment investigating, as well as the Youth Justice, we're investigating Umbulgari because the government is about to demolish houses and the people were forcibly evicted in 2011. So we're trying to get community support for that and bring attention to that cause. So watch that space. You know, we're not ready to go ahead with it yet, but I think it's okay for me to speak out about it now on the radio because it is a big injustice. We've got the constitutional recognition stuff coming up. Amnesty is taking the approach that, you know, with all the division in the community about recognise, you need some impartial organisations involved. So we're trying to offer that sort of impartial lens to constitutional recognition. There's heaps on the agenda with Amnesty. I'm happy to stay with Amnesty for, you know, quite a chunk. I was looking at it the other day and it's kind of like I stay in organisations for about 4 years each time, but I'm loving Amnesty at the moment. So I want to give it a really good go and really see through this Indigenous Youth Justice campaign, which we anticipate will consume us for the next 3 years.
Fantastic. Look, Tammy, thank you for your time. I know you are up in Fitzroy Crossing and there's probably plenty to do before you do move on to the next town. But thank you for having a chat with us about the Sir Ronald Wilson lecture that you presented last month on justice reinvestment, about some of the work that Amnesty's involved in. And what motivates you as a Nikina woman to just keep doing this in the line of justice?
Thanks so much for having me, Jodie. It's a great program and I'm glad that this gets broadcast nationally now.
Yeah, we are too. We're absolutely thrilled to speak out to more of our mob and other interested people through the National Indigenous Radio Service. It's an amazing thing, technology, isn't it, linking our communities up around the country. How good is that?
It's wonderful. Congratulations.
Tammy, we hope to chat with you again before too long. Enjoy the rest of the work up in the north of the state and we look forward to catching up with you again here on Law Matters.
Thanks, Jodie.
Tammy Solonek, the Amnesty International Australia Indigenous Peoples Rights Manager. Jump on the website for Amnesty. So much work they're involved in. Fantastic to see. And great to chat with Tammy Solonek here on the program today. From myself, Jodie Hoffman, thank you for your time on the program. I hope you can join us again next week. Take it easy.